woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Well, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tomo. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 40, NASDAQ Futures up 166 as we try again for the bounce rally here after kind of some pretty bad days in a row. Yesterday we ended up kind of unchanged, but we've had some bad ones in a row. We're looking for the big bounce rally, and maybe it's today, but yesterday... It looked like it was going to be yesterday. Then all of a sudden, mid-morning, the tariff thing came up again, and we went right back the other way. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning, sir.
How are you? I was out with a bunch of your kind last night.
Did they explain? Because I want to lead with this. Did they explain to you what happened in that case last night where the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court at 10 p.m., when he should be in bed, you know, getting ready for the next day, work day, is writing emergency administrative stays of stupid court decisions. Did they explain to you what was going on there?
They broke up long before 10. These guys are old.
Well, this would have been 9 o'clock our time, or your time.
Yeah, okay. They still were long gone by 9.
So here's what happened. I think John Roberts is trying to save the judiciary from itself, and I think maybe that's the explanation for a lot of his decisions. But this one goes. This really does show how lawfare develops, and you can take a side if you want, but the idea that we have some kind of judiciary that is relatively impartial and sits on top of these decisions and looks at what the law is, I think is rapid. If it hasn't disappeared completely, it's almost gone. So here's what happened. The Democratic opposition to one of Trump's DOGE moves, which it really just involved a federal agency refusing to disburse money that was in a bunch of these entities had become accustomed to. So it's a USAID type operation, and the administration froze its funds, a number of these funds. So some groups come in and they forum shop around and by really dint of collaboration with the clerk's office in D.C., they get the case assigned to a judge who's been on the bench for a month, who is Canadian-born guy who got appointed, was rammed through at the last minute in by the Biden people in the Senate, and comes on the bench as a total, homer for the Democrats,
which you don't have any of those Republican guys like that.
Well, there are. I'm just saying this is how bad it gets. I'm just going to give you a bad example. To my mind, what this guy has done was probably the worst, and I have yet to see a conservative district court judge be corrected by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which is what ultimately ends up happening. But here's how this game gets played. So they shop it to this guy. The other side comes in, and the Democrats come in, and they ask for a TRO, which is a temporary restraining order. So there are two kinds of early interventions a court can be asked to make: preliminary injunctions and temporary restraining orders. A temporary restraining order is exactly that. It is a, in some cases, ex parte, which means it's entered without the appearance of the other side. But it is an emergency order to be used in the most extreme circumstances when something terrible is about to happen and there is no remedy. There could be no remedy. TROs, where you see a TRO, for example, would be like the demolition of a building that is a historic place. And you know, the company's going to come in and it's going to come in and take the building down. You go into court, get a TRO. The court basically freezes things as they are at the time you walk in. Okay, so they go in front of this judge, they ask for a TRO. The other version is a preliminary injunction. A preliminary injunction, the court takes evidence. They put people on the stand. The court gets testimony, it listens, and it makes a determination before trial. And a preliminary injunction is a very early signal. The court has to make a determination as to whether there's going to likelihood that the side asking for the injunction is going to win. And so the court actually makes an early on determination. The big difference is under the federal rules of evidence, or federal rules of procedure, that a TRO can be a TRO can't be appealed. They generally only last for 10 days, and you don't, you know, they're not extended. So you don't appeal a TRO, but a TRO doesn't really force you to do anything. It just locks in things as they are. A preliminary injunction can be appealed. So the Democrats go in and they ask for a temporary restraining order, a TRO. But what they do is they ask the court to order the government to pay this money out.
Which has, by the way, been passed and signed by a president, probably even Trump.
No. There's a generic bill somewhere that says that this agency has the power to disperse this money.
The money was given to somebody. And some president signed it, and now Elon Musk says, "I don't want to spend it."
You got to stop interrupting.
All right,
That's not right. The money was allocated in a sort of generic fund, but it's dispersed specifically according to grants, and the grants can be revoked at any time.
By whom?
By the federal executive agency that's dispersing the money.
Okay.
All of these grants, virtually all of them, that are at issue in these cases, have that language in them. So the government can shut these grants down whenever it wants. The executive agency has the discretion. If you control the executive agency, you have the discretion to turn these grants on and off on an individual basis. You make an individual inquiry, say, yeah, I don't like the way this money's going, I can turn it off. They're all written that way.
All right, back up a second. If Lou's charitable organization or whatever it is, Lou's tumbling team, goes somewhere and for some reason gets a grant for the year, and is going to get a check every month, and in May they can come in and say, "Screw you, you're out."
The language of these things is written with very wide discretion to the executive agency.
So what good is a grant if you can't plan on it?
Well, they do plan on it.
Well, they're wrong.
They go in and they ask for the TRO and they ask the court to force the disbursement of this money. So that's wrong. The first response to that should be, you're in the wrong court. Because you can't sue the government for money. You can't sue to make the government pay you money. That requires a waiver of sovereign immunity, and the government doesn't do that. If you want to sue the government for money, you go into the federal court of claims. And you don't come into a federal district court. But they don't want to do that because the federal court of claims, if they go into the court of claims, the court of claims goes, okay, fine, we'll put this on the docket. It'll be, you know, a year before things get get determined.
Well, I'm absolutely sure you're right, except the idea that the Republicans are bitching about the Democrats' use of procedure. Nobody's using any procedure here.
Yes, they are.
Ooh.
And so you need to, and that's how this goes. So the first thing the court does is, the judge does is ignore this requirement. He then basically continues with the TRO. So he's not supposed to be forcing the government to do anything. He's just supposed to lock things in place as they are. He continues with the TRO. He issues a confusing TRO order that tells the government, you have to disperse this money, but you're allowed to do whatever is legal, okay? And so the government says, well, the executive agency says, well, I've got the right to shut this grant off, so I'm shutting it off because the court said you could do whatever you would norm is legal, but you have to disperse the money. Fine. I'm gonna do this legally. I'm gonna take that legal part of it and do that. Well, that gets everybody all upset. So they go back in and they say, the plaintiffs go back in and they say, no, we need the money. So the court says, okay, I'm gonna issue another TRO order. And this time I'm gonna order you to pay the money, and I'm gonna order you to pay it within 5 hours. $2 billion. And the government says,
The government, you mean Trump, the new government.
Yeah, the federal executive agency.
Okay, the new dictator.
Well, he's not a dictator. Why is he a dictator?
Well, just watch. No,
before
we get into this discussion, what I'm trying to do is figure out the procedure.
Okay, is the procedure.
Okay, no, I'm talking about the legal procedure. I'm talking about the grant procedure. If you still lived in, where were you, Western Springs or something? If you still lived in Western Springs, and Western Springs went out and applied for a grant for, say, a new railroad station, and you get the grant, so you start building the damn thing. I'm not criticizing. I'm just asking where, and all of a sudden somebody says, we're not issuing the check. I mean, where along the line, and I'm not defending this judge. It sounds like
no,
kind of
I understand.
But where along the line do you say, wait a minute, told me it was coming.
All,
where the hell is it? I owe these people.
First of all, those kinds of grants are done under a different category.
Okay.
So
what I'm asking.
Construction, when federal construction loans are put out, they're put out in a different category with a different kind of funding to preclude exactly this. Okay? This grant is an ongoing services kind of grant. So you have these entities that have established themselves on the government trough and are running fat, dumb, and happy because USAID has been giving them money.
You know, I'm with you on this. But I guess what I'm saying, is, what does the thing say? Because you have people there.
Well,
you have.
I don't have the grants sitting in front of me. But they are grants that the government can cancel whenever it needs to or wants to.
I'm sure they can. I'm just kind of curious as to, is it, you can't if Lou's Foundation has 50 people working there or 20 or 10, you can't cut the grant off the day before the next paycheck goes out. There's got to be some sense of intelligence here. It's a 30-day cut off, a 60-day, 90-something, something.
I'll do research. You can wonder about that while I explain what happens.
Okay.
Hold that thought, and I'll look that up for the next show.
Okay.
So the government, they go back in and say they're not, the government's not going to pay us. The plaintiff goes in, the government's not going to pay us. The court goes, okay, now I'm going to issue a TRO, another TRO, illegally, that says they have to pay you.
Well, I hope the grant was at least in front of the judge that he read before he did this.
That's a good question, Tom, but I don't know.
I mean, if I read it and I said, look, you can cancel me after 90 days,
that doesn't matter because you're not supposed to be there anyway. You don't have, using a TRO, you don't have the power to force the government to pay anything. But he issues a TRO anyway. So the government says, okay, we're going to play by the rules. We go up on appeal to the D.C. Court of Appeals. The D.C. Court of Appeals, which has three judges in it that are all appointed by, one's appointed by Obama, and I think the other two are appointed by Biden. The D.C. Court of Appeals panel says, well, this is a TRO, and there's no appeal from the TRO, so we can't hear this. At which point, again, a complete abrogation of their duties.
Yeah, but you just said you can't appeal it.
But so what they should have done is said to the lower court, you're acting illegally here with the TRO. You've got the wrong order. You can't force the government to do this. Shut this down. But instead, they ignored it. At this point, the government says, we're being asked to pay $2 billion on 2 hours' notice.
Yeah, who the hell's getting $2 billion?
It's good question. It's an aid. I think it was an AIDS entity. And at this point, the government then goes, knocks on the door of the Supreme Court and says, you know, we need some help here. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court comes down and finally shuts this down. He tells the district court, he doesn't slap the D.C. Court of Appeals around, which is what he should have done, because he's a nice guy and he's trying to preserve the federal court system.
He's also a Republican appointed. We left that.
Well, Roberts, but he's the guy who saved Obamacare. You can't look at Roberts as a Republican. Trust me. If you looked at his rulings over the last 20 years, you don't come to that conclusion. He's something else. He doesn't slap the circuit court around, which would have damaged the reputation of the circuit court. Instead, he goes to the district judge and says, this is wrong. You screwed up. I'm putting an administrative stay in place. Don't do anything. You know, just stay away from this case. Don't touch anything. We'll hear arguments on Friday. And so my point, though, is this is how lawfare works. You get judges who just basically ignore the requirements that everybody else has to play by, and on these particular kinds of cases. And you saw, I mean, it was particularly evident with Trump. You saw this in the New York case with Bragg. You saw it in the the New York was the worst with the criminal case and the civil cases. But this is how you get terrible, awful results. And this is how, frankly, you get people who go out and go crazy, because they look at these results and say there is no recourse. And this played out.
Well, there doesn't
out
appear
last
to be
night.
Any recourse there than the administration does right now.
There's plenty of recourse.
What? Where? Where?
Well, in courts, they're getting tied up. They're getting tied up in some legitimate cases where they've overreached. They're getting tied up by the federal judiciary where they should be. This is just a crazy, awful example.
Okay, but I mean, if you look through what these guys are doing, you could find a million awful examples too. The world's nuts, Blue. It's on both sides.
Where can I promise you, I'm unaware of any examples that are this bad.
You can't think of any example where people are going in and firing people. They have no idea what they do. They have no idea who they're helping, what they're doing. They're just firing people. You don't think there's one case of that out there with this moron Musk doing what he's doing?
I don't think Elon Musk is a moron, number one. Number two, I think that what you're seeing is a classic example of what I have been railing against for the last 20 years. Well, not 20. How long have I been on the show? I'm coming up on 20.
Yeah, well, I've been here since the start, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, 15 years. The last 15 years. Where I've been screaming about the fact that you've got federal executive overreach, and that's what's happening. This is to the extent, and there may be some significant.
By the way,
maybe significant procedural issues with what Musk is doing.
When I said he was a moron, I didn't mean he. No, as an individual,
insulting.
What I'm saying is an awful lot of people that are brilliant can wander outside their thing and do some stuff. There can be people that are brilliant engineers, and they, when it comes to growing grass, they're a moron. I mean,
what you're watching is an example of how you have to deal, or how I think you have to deal with the federal executive morass. They are coming in, his group of people are coming in, and they are running some of the most basic elementary
We don't know what they're doing.
Hold it. Let me finish the statement.
You're gonna have this huge spiel. Same thing that we have other people of how meticulous these guys are. Nobody knows what they're doing.
That's not. See, you jump to conclusions because you're so anti-Musk,
I'm not,
and anti-Trump. You're jumping
to
conclusions.
What
I was about to say is you are having people coming in and running the most basic business management analyses on these organizations, and these things are so screwed up that their only option is to say, if you can't explain this to me, we're cutting it.
Lou,
that's what he's doing.
What was the?
And that's not meticulous.
You give him, you're giving everybody on one side of the world the benefit of the doubt, and nobody on the other.
Guys,
side.
Hold on. What was the judge who made the error? Was he elected or was he appointed or what?
All federal judges are appointed.
So he was appointed. And is there any punishment from the Supreme Court or from the?
No. They have to impeach him. If that's what they're going to do.
So who controls the impeachment?
The House.
So the House is going to impeach a judge.
We're going to impeach every judge that
no, but that's
disagrees.
Brand new.
They would have to impeach if they're going to impeach him, and he's not. He has not committed being stupid or being wrong or being biased. At least to the level that this guy is not an impeachable offense yet. You have to pretty much do something criminal to be impeached. And
so, what's his defense?
He doesn't have a defense. His defense is I'm an idiot.
And he'll get to stay.
It's an article. He's what's called an Article III judge. Okay. He gets tried in the House and impeached in the Senate, just like the president does.
They're going to waste how much time on this guy?
They're not going to wait. They're not going to take any time on him. He's brand new in the job. They're not going to impeach him.
So they're going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, don't do that again?
The court has not even said, don't do that again. But the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has come in and wrested control of this case away from this doofus.
Is that what's supposed to happen,
or
is
no.
the appellate court?
No, the Supreme
to?
Court. The Supreme Court does not typically do anything with federal district court cases. It stays away from them. But in cases of craziness like this, in cases of extreme bias like this, the court can step in.
So, are there going to be more of these?
I don't know. I've never seen this before. I've never seen this happen before. It's within the court's administrative power, but I have never seen this happen. And that's why, Tom, when you say this happens all the time on the other side, the answer is no, it doesn't.
No, I'm saying the amount of people that are doing stuff politically now instead of doing their job. But everybody, when I say everybody,
wait a minute,
lot of
full
people,
stop. Okay. This is Musk's job.
What exactly is his position?
His position is the head of this executive entity. Under an outfit that I think was created by Obama, if I remember right, but he's an appointed federal executive agent.
Okay, I just so you know, I mean, because there's an awful lot of this going around of how good these guys are and how smart they are. They've got a system. We have a small brokerage firm here, right? And one of the things you have to have if you're a small brokerage firm is an audit every year, an independent audit. Okay, and we have a group that's been doing our stuff for God knows how long. It takes them 6 weeks, Lou, to come in here and try and figure out if we have done anything untoward. Okay, now how in the hell do these guys go into an agency and with Musk kid there picking his nose in the Oval Office, and they're going to go in? Who even are these people? Are they an accounting firm? Do they have any kind of chops? Do they have anybody with any degrees? Who the hell are they? They're going to go to an agency and they're going to say, looks to me like you're spending money on stuff that I don't want you to spend money on, so you're out. That's not an audit. An audit is what they should do is go back to the Congress and say, look at where all this money goes. By the way, is that what you guys really wanted it to go? And put through a bill and cut it.
Yeah,
we have
and,
a procedure
and
in this
that,
country.
And that means nothing gets that. See,
okay, but
that means nothing gets done.
This is my biggest. You know, you've known me forever. Nobody is convinced that there's more duplication in government, and could we, you and I and a few of the other guys on the show, because we got some pretty bright people, could we go in and over a couple of years' time weed out the duplication? Wayne was coming on after you, says there's 18 places that are gathering information, intelligence information. I think you and I could probably make that down to 15 or 14 or 13. But the idea that, that we're going to have outside entities being Hacksaw Al or running the Sunbeam in those places.
Chainsaw.
What's the difference? Chainsaw, hacksaw.
Well, there's a big difference in terms of the amount of damage you can do with a chainsaw versus the amount of damage you can do with a hacksaw.
So, I mean,
it wasn't the Texas hacksaw murders. Let's put it that way.
But the idea that we have, you know, the consumer department, which I've from day one, I thought it was duplicative, Lou. But now you've got people working there and they're doing stuff. Okay, well then they get rid of those guys and probably. From day one, I said, by the way, this looks like it's duplicative to me. Do we really need these people? We've got the Fed. We've got the Comptroller of Currency. But the chairman of the Fed said, was asked point blank at a news conference, by the way, if somebody has complaints and stuff about banks screwing people, which they do, he goes, well, that's not my job. There's nothing that we will pick up that these guys do if they're gone.
I'm not worried about that. And that's a separate issue from what's happening on these cases. We can debate all day long about whether Trump is correct in authorizing Elon Musk to do this. That's not what's happening in the courts. What's happening in the courts is a very, and the Trump people are forcing this, a very thorough assessment of how much power the executive has versus how much power Congress has. Versus how much power the judiciary has.
Look at the personalities of these people. They want all of it.
They're like Cheney
and okay, do we really want
that?
You
know, people voted for this.
Whoa. Don't go there. Don't go there. And the worst election, the people who lose get 48% of the vote. And starting with the goofball governor we had here in Illinois that won by 3 votes, and he walks in and talks out he had a mandate. What are you talking about?
I'm saying that the country voted for someone who said, I'm going to take a chainsaw to our federal executive agencies and get this under control.
Well, you can't do that to me. The people voted against a horrendous candidate. Because
it's not my fault that the other candidate presented... Just listen. Listen to me. You need to sort of step back, get away from personalities, and look at what's actually happening.
I am stepping back. If I ran, and somewhere during my campaign, and I'm running against some horrible candidate, somewhere in my campaign, I said, you know, I'm going to get rid of all lawyers, and I say that in March, and the election is November.
You'd be Richard III.
I would never have the balls to come out and say, gee, these people all voted to get rid of lawyers, but these people do. I would never say that. How do I know why somebody voted for me? They could have not liked the other person. They could have scratched the wrong thing on there. For me to... I watched of the Nation Sunday, which I never want to do. All these guys come on there. That's what people voted for. Unless you know what... Do you talk to any of these voters? Do you know why they voted? They may have voted because they didn't want a black female.
No, you're wrong, like, on every count here. I'm just going to tell you why. If you take a public survey, if you want to go that route... These steps that he's taking are popular with like 70% of the country. But regardless, it just rankles me when somebody says
this is why people voted. Nobody knows why people voted.
Okay. But if you are concerned about this, go look at what the public opinion polls are saying. Now, I don't believe in governing by public opinion polls, but Trump specifically said he was going to do this over and over again. So here you are. My point is, this is what you're seeing, Tom, is a federal executive that has said, I'm not going to allow these executive agencies to continue to operate as this kind of fourth estate of government that runs the country, even if we have a brain dead federal executive, chief executive, who you know, goes after ice cream cones and is propped up with drugs and God knows what else.
The guy was
every
just
now
there.
And then to make a public appearance.
He was just there 4 years ago. He's not new.
He got a good look at it 4 years ago. So he steps up and says, "I'm going to try to fix this, and I'm going to come in. I'm going to come in with a meat axe because Congress has not." Done its job, and this is one of my themes, Congress has not done its job in restricting federal power. It has gotten rid of its responsibility and sent its responsibility over to these federal executive agencies. Okay, here's what happens when you do that, and I'm going to run with it. And he's running with
all,
it.
All I'm after here, Lou, I think at the end of the day, I would probably shrink government more than these guys are even doing it, okay? But the difference between us and the rest of the savage world is not what we do, it's how we do it. And for somebody to decide Congress isn't doing their job, by the way, some of these judges are idiots, they disagree with me, I'm just going to do all this stuff. But that's not what's happening.
This administration has been scrupulous in following good court orders. Trust me, if they wanted to throw a hissy fit, they could. There has not been a constitutional crisis. The federal executive, Trump and his people, have not gone in and defied a federal judge, any of them. They've done what they're going in and running this through the court system the way it's supposed to work. They are being what's fascinating is watching at the federal judiciary level, watching judges who really, really, really don't want, appointed by Democrats, who really don't want this outcome.
I think the solution is every Democratic appointed judge should be impeached or thrown out or hung.
I would probably go along with that.
Sure, absolutely.
But my point is that they are going through and working this and forcing these judges to make decisions that, for example, in this case, with this guy in D.C., that make the judges look dumb. And they're forcing them into this because these judges are not giving the correct rulings or not. They're allowing their biases to control how their courtrooms are operating. And we saw this big time.
Do you think Elon Musk?
We saw this big time with the January 6th defendants. And notwithstanding the fact that some of those guys had other criminal records, the procedural violations in those cases and the violations of civil rights that took place in those cases, in my opinion, were enough to justify the granting of a blanket pardon. We let guilty people go sometimes, because the process was so wrong. And so, this is what's happening. They're forcing this issue now. If the Supreme Court comes down and says Elon Musk is subject to the appointments clause in the Constitution and the president should have appointed him and I'm going to avoid all this stuff, so be it. That may happen. There are other challenges.
We've got to impeach those guys who voted for that.
No. I mean, if that happens, the court, the administration will throw its hands up and say, okay, this is what we do. I sincerely doubt they will do what Joe Biden did, which is to say, I know the law is unconstitutional, but if I can string this out long enough, I can disburse billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, to the people I like before the court shuts it down.
Isn't that part of the strategy, though?
It's not part of this strategy.
Well, when he says, I'm doing it, he would contend probably, I'm doing it legally. It's not my fault that the courts take forever.
Well, that was his cynical justification that I know what I'm doing is against the Constitution and is
but
illegal.
It's not against the Constitution, is it? Yes,
the statute, an exercise of unconstitutional power is an exercise of unconstitutional power. It's not an exercise of unconstitutional power.
But there's no statute about that, is it?
Is there? Statute about what?
I think constitutional power these days in the eye of the beholder.
No, about say if he says I'm going to get this done, and the only way you can stop it is through the courts, and there's not enough time. Well, that means that there's no precedent, right?
It means you've got a friendly judge or friendly judges at least initially, who aren't going to preclude this. What happened with Biden with the student loans and with a number of other things that were put out during COVID, is that he came out and said. He had people telling him, and he admitted this, my people tell me I can't do this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. And we'll wait. We'll, maybe we can get money out before the court shuts it down. That's an impeachable offense in my mind, because the president is saying, I know this is unconstitutional, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, what is the hair up the Republicans' ass about student loans and about health care? They will bitch and bitch and bitch, and they will never do it. Don't they understand that?
I don't know, but that's a separate subject.
Well, no, I'm saying, why can't the Congress and why can't people fix the student loan stuff? What is so hung up about the Republicans not wanting anybody to be able to declare bankruptcy, even if the kid's dead and somebody signed for it and are 80 years old? I mean, why can't we fix any of this?
I don't know why that's not an issue for the Republicans, but it. The student loan process is not something that the Republicans wrote. It's been in place for decades.
If Biden can do what he did, kind of forcing it down government's throat, can Trump do the same thing?
Yeah, and I would say that's wrong, and that's unconstitutional, and that's an impeachable offense.
So he hasn't.
No, and we can't impeach him again because we did it wrong a couple times. So now he's clear.
Well, whether it's
but if he wanted to do it in this case, say, I want to do this.
Theoretically, he could have said, on this case that I just talked about, where they went with a TRO, he could have said, "I'm the president. I'm not going to disperse this money. This is a temporary restraining order. It's the wrong mechanism. I'm not going to disperse the money." He could have said that.
So if he wanted to, he could have just ignored the ruling and said, "Don't do it." And that would have forced
that idiotic federal judge to say, "I'm going to find the president in contempt, and I'm going to start throwing some of his people in jail."
Wait a second.
Well, yeah, I'm going to start throwing some of his people in jail.
Can't do that if you're a Democrat. Here,
Let's get to the end of Greg's question. So that's, and that would be a constitutional crisis, Greg, and they have not done that yet.
The question that keeps buzzing around here this morning, whether Greg's asking it or me, is if House or somebody puts together a bill and grants somebody some dough, right or wrong, the president in office signs for it, and you switch to a next president next week, and he just say, "I'm not doing that."
Yes, he can do that.
Why?
You know why?
Why?
Because Congress didn't write into the law, this money is to be dispersed to these entities with
no questions
asked.
Sometimes they do, by the way.
Yes, they do. But they didn't do it in this case.
That seems like a good thing to me, giving the executive the flexibility to do it.
Well, and
Congress can't even do its job right now.
Yeah, there are lots of circumstances where that's happened, but if you give that discretion to the executive agency, then the executive agency giveth and the executive agency taketh away.
So Biden really didn't do a good job of handing out this money because,
well, according to who?
Well, if I guess whatever order, it wasn't enough because
actually
they're going to stop it.
Actually, Louis, I did read some of this regarding war stuff. Matter of fact, even I talked about it. Really, I don't know who the last president was, if it was Obama or Trump or Biden. We actually are starting to get in some of these bills individual companies named for some of this stuff, which really hasn't happened since World War II, where they would actually say, you know, lose battleship companies getting money for these three battleships or something.
Tom, they could say this money will be dispersed for these purposes, and it must be spent this way, and it must be spent in the fiscal year. And they say that, for example, for construction stuff, they say that, you know, this has to be put into this project.
I'm fishing as a non-attorney here. I'm fishing for the words where you can and you can't. If you give the money to Chicago for infrastructure improvements, and there's 12 bridges, God knows what else is on there. If it's detailed into these bridges, these roads, and so forth,
then you can't say I'm
stopping payment. But if it just give me an example of one that's so general that you don't even know where it's going. I guess I don't know what that bill looks like.
So that was probably 100% of the USAID budget, where they said we're going to fund USAID for projects within the discretion of USAID to promote American interests abroad. Boom. Here's $80 billion.
Without any kind of detail at all? How could they pass a bill like that?
No. Well, But that's how they, that's the point. That's my point. That's how you end up with a transgender or whatever the hell it was comic book.
Well, we've had all kinds of cameras that were all, that were Republican denominated. They must be doing the same thing. It just doesn't all happen when one guys are in there.
I'm just telling you, the authorizations, these authorizations are so generic that the grants, when they are issued according to a standard government grant agreement, which allows the federal executive agency essentially total control over the operation of it. They don't. They just give the money out. But now Musk is coming in and his people are coming in and they're using algorithms in their computer systems to cull through these programs. And they can see exactly what that money went for. And they're going, okay, who authorized $230,000 for the comic book, the transgender comic book?
You're going to find...
Or opera or whatever it was. Anyway, this is... Nobody has looked at this level of detail before.
Okay, we keep getting back to the same piece. Isn't that somebody's job? I mean, other than Elon Musk saying, I wouldn't have spent it here. That's not the way you're supposed to do this.
You would think so. But no, and that's why the Department of Defense has not passed an audit in what, 8 years? Because nobody's doing that. It's other people's money. Nobody takes the care with it. Nobody's coming in and saying, "Okay, I'm going to see a budget of what we spent money on every project. I want to see it." Nobody is doing that except for this guy.
Well, you have no idea how much I agree with what you're talking about.
Yeah, because it's basic common sense accounting.
I'm also, there needs to be some kind of a process here, and for Congress to abdicate even more at this point is not my solution. The president should be like two dogs when they poop and plows. They should stick both Congress's nose in it and say, hey, asses, get to work and do this stuff.
And they're not doing it, Tom.
Well, okay, so then why don't we just get rid of Congress?
It's so lucrative.
Why don't we
to Congress
so what's
and the,
solution? The
people that are getting the money?
What's the solution?
I'm still the not. Solution, what's the problem? I mean, I'm still not convinced. There's
the problem is that a lot of this stuff is bloated. A lot of the stuff are the programs that should have gotten rid of 10 years ago. All that stuff is all over the place. I mean,
the problem is, Greg, that there's no accountability.
It seems like the system's kind of working. I don't know.
Well, you also, Lou,
that they're fighting and
take
and,
this into a. Just as a thought, I went back last weekend, and by the way, I'm trying to find ways where I don't have to argue with people because I think you guys are pretty much right in a lot of what you're saying. I went back in when Bush was in office. I don't know where the hell I found this crap. It had to do with the Office of Management, whoever those guys are.
OMB.
They give an estimate of how much waste is in government, like every year. So it was.
But it's only an estimate.
Okay. But I'm saying the number is during Bush's first, when he first walked in, it was like $95 billion or some number. When he left, they thought it was 100 and something something. And it's going up. Well, I did all the math. And it essentially comes down to being roughly about 3% a year. And it seems to be somewhat steady until COVID showed up. It bumped up to like 4 or more because we're giving money to people that.
Musk says it's 25%.
Okay. Yep. I'm not talking about in each department in Washington. I'm talking about general budget. That's another thing that really pisses me off about these guys is they're feeding propaganda to...
It's just a big spread.
A dumb population. Whether you get rid of the Consumer Affairs Department, you get rid of these 15,000 people and eat your chainsaw out and you make it feel like they're all a bunch of idiots you're getting rid of, it's 0.0001 of the federal budget. I'm saying most of the federal budget goes out to people in checks, right, Lou, or to the military.
Well, the entitlement programs. But they're going to take a chainsaw to the entitlement programs too.
Whatever. What I'm saying is, as we've gone by, I think the number now is still about 3%. It's been there like forever.
Nobody, Tom, this is like climate change. Nobody knows. Because they don't have a measurement system in place. There's no effective measurement. They're guessing at what DOJ uncovers and what then they say, okay, we'll extrapolate that. Nobody knows. And so, again, I the reason you're seeing this kind of slash and burn style here is because the organizations are so, you know, obscure in terms by design, in terms of what they're doing and how they're doing it, that the only answer is to say, okay, we're going to have to take all of this out. And when we take it all out and remove all of it, we'll look at who starts screaming, and we'll say, okay, that's one we should fund.
Lou, I try to use my unfortunate lifetime experience with numbers. If somebody's going to go into and do a big person audit, an intelligent audit, I want them to come out with this is quote the waste, you know, that we think we have. We got maybe too many people. We got this, that, and the other thing. These are programs that, by the way, it looks to me like we're sending a check and the place isn't even there anymore. That could be. I want those people to tell me that's 2% of the problem, or 3, 4, or 5. And by the way, I don't want somebody to walk in and say, we just spent $200,000 on the mating habits of the snail darter, and pick one out of there, and all of a sudden throw that out to the people and say, therefore, the whole unit's screwed up. I don't want that. That's not the way I've been trained.
I know. But you're not a politician, and you don't have to get elected to office.
I get it.
These guys have to get elected. They have to come up with justification. Think of this in the same way that we were talking about the only debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Okay? You'll remember, if you think back, everybody said that Harris won the debate. She goaded Trump into saying, you know, dumb things and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And yet, 1 week after that debate, what were we talking about? We were talking about people eating cats and dogs.
Well, that's right.
Who won the debate?
It's
Trump.
That's not exactly my style.
But you're not a politician.
I get it.
So what you do to establish support for your program is you come in with your chainsaw, and every time you slash and burn into something, you find some incredibly stupid expenditure that's millions or billions of dollars, you lay it out there.
I know that when you're a very learned individual, Lou, and I'm jealous of how much you read and so forth. I know you're a Shakespearean kind of guy, and when you wrote,
what does that mean?
When you understand the times, not the when you walked into the Shakespearean theater. For those that
cry
don't
havoc,
know,
for let those slip the dogs.
Well, for those
war.
That don't know, you had people, the out in the balconies and the nice chairs, and God knows if they're getting drinks or what they were doing those days. Then you had the people, they used to call it the people stood in the middle that were like the underlings. What do you call those people? So you'd have when you wrote a play, you had to appeal to both.
Yeah, Shakespeare did.
Yeah, but other guys did more. You know, some guys would have guys beat girls and stuff on the stage because the young guys, what do they used to call those guys? Kind of drawing a blank.
Hoi polloi?
No, they were, there was a name for it. Were they groundlings? I think they were the groundlings, weren't they?
Okay, the people. Well, yeah. I mean, I've actually seen plays in the reenacted Globe Theater, and you get a very clear picture of how this works.
But so, I mean, I would like my leaders to be like Roosevelt and Churchill and appeal to the, as Freud would say, the ego and not the id. And it kind of bothers me that these guys are so successful going the other way. And what they're doing, I'm not criticizing. The fact that it seems to be working is what's bothering me. I guess is really the. I mean, you don't appeal to people's lowest denominator.
That's
all day
been
long.
That's always politics. I'm not sure.
Not always. There's always degrees of it, right, Luke?
No, always. That's it.
It's
even worse.
The whole point of this is to establish memorable,
yes,
bits that are easy to assimilate, that are dramatic, and that point to your side.
Right.
Cats and dogs. I mean, that's a great...
Yeah.
I mean, with Scott Adams, who I read, and I don't believe everything he says, but he's got had some great points. He said, listen, if you want a memorable play on what immigration means in the United States, and you want to establish an image, the image of people eating other people's pets is a pretty good...
Lou, I know you're probably one of the few people that have read this, but if you read the the translation in Mein Kampf regarding the big lie.
Yes.
The most amazing piece of it, I read it, I kind of had a feeling what the big lie was, but when I actually read it, Hitler said that if you do it right, even long after everybody knows it was wrong, I mean, it's been debunked, 40% of the people will still believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like psychology?
Hitler was a master at dealing with masses. Right?
First of all, the guy that I prefer to read and who actually published his stuff before Hitler is Lenin.
And Lenin
said essentially the same thing.
Let's
put this aside because I want to talk one sports thing.
Give me a quick. You know, Armin Hammer thought that Lenin was the most intelligent man he ever met.
Yeah. Hammer was enthralled to the Russians.
I want to talk about sports.
I want to talk about the S2 cognition test.
What is that?
Ah, yes. So the combine's going right now, and they administer the Wunderlich test down there for sort of smarts.
Do you have to take that?
They do have to take the Wunderlich. The S2 cognition test is a new test, that relatively new. The NFLPA has specifically bargained that the league cannot use it at the combine. It is a test to measure how quickly the brain can process information in real time. The S2 cognition test, I think it's like a 45-minute test, but it has 8 tests of 9 cognitive functions which are graded separately. It's like keeping track of things with multiple objects, identifying designated shapes in a crowd to track perception speed, search efficiency. I'm reading now.
Is it oral or written?
It's written, but okay. You're observing.
Okay.
They put things in front of you, and they put shapes in front of you. How fast can you pick this shape out? How do you track it? How quickly can you recognize it? And it's particularly useful for quarterbacks. And more importantly, you can't study for it. And so, scores above 80 are elite. Purdy, supposedly, because the scores are supposed to be closely held, Purdy supposedly scored in the mid-90s. The highest scoring guy was a defensive corner.
Really?
McDuffie. Yeah. Who played corner, I think, for the Chiefs. Anyway, this test is now being administered, not at the combine, but if you have a pro day, they will come in and demand that you take this test because it apparently is a pretty good indicator of your ability to process things. Now, having said that, Bryce Young supposedly scored in the upper 90th percentile, and C.J. Stroud supposedly scored in the 40th percentile. I know which one of those two guys you'd rather have a quarterback. So it's not perfect, but the idea that they're running now tests, and again, it's not surprising it would focus on quarterbacks, but potentially the single most important position, but it is much more of a processing speed. How fast can you process things? How fast can you absorb information? How quickly can you pick out what's going on in front of you in terms of pattern recognition and recognize, okay, here's the guy I should
be
hitting.
Who's the guy? How much is the guy getting paid to come up with this test? Wow.
I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. I'll have to look it up. I just read about it late last night as I was getting ready to prepare for the show. And isn't that funny? You'd never know that I prepared for this.
Oh yeah, I know. I still have
not
to,
the way not the way I sound.
I still have to insult you about what I heard last night, Lou, your legal buddies.
Okay. Well, anyway, look up this test because it's really interesting.
I've already got a link
doing.
In the notes.
We should.
It's a video. It's pretty cool.
Greg will find it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I've done my duty for the show today. I've introduced a new concept.
So the Wunderlich they're taking at the combine, and this one they're doing on pro days.
Pro days and other tests. Yeah, yeah.
What if somebody doesn't do any of this stuff? They still get drafted. I mean,
You look at film and you look at that, but if somebody says I'm not, well, first of all, you have to take the Wunderlich. If you go to the combine, that's a requirement. If you don't take the, I've never heard of a player opting out of the Wunderlich.
But if you get a 10 on it, people still draft you, right?
Oh yeah. And this you know, I mean, if you get a 40 on this the S2 test, then they still, you know, they still draft you. I mean, if your film looks good enough. Now, Stroud slipped to the second round, or slipped to the second pick. I mean, he's still a first round pick. It didn't off put the Texans from drafting him. But anyway, just this is a measure of how things, the technology in football is changing. And by the way, they made an announcement supposedly last night. They're going to change how they're measuring yard placement, football placement for 2025. And I wonder if they're going to put chips in the football.
Yeah, they made it official. It's going to be electronic. The yep. chain gang is for backup.
Yeah. Yeah. So in any event, well, and you know, after the Bills playoff game, I think they had to do that. But in any event, take a look at this test. That'll be something to talk about.
All right. Want to hear my quick story?
Sure. Go ahead.
Evidently, Chicago, one of the guys last night was a prosecutor, and he's like 80-something years old. He was talking about how some guy in Chicago, he's this Irish mob guy, he kills somebody and he gets sentenced to the gallows. So Chicago evidently had a gallows. I don't know if you knew that or not. And so the dude somehow escapes to Ireland, and they can't find him for like 30 years. But in the meantime, they'd gone over to the electric chair, right? And but they kept the gallows because evidently, if they ever caught him, he would have had his choice of going to the gallows rather than the electric chair. And if they didn't have a gallows, they wouldn't have been able to execute him. So they kept the gallows in this building for like forever. So finally they decide, well, the guy must be dead. They take the gallows apart. Virtually all these attorneys and judges wanted a piece of the gallows in their framed in their room as a souvenir.
Criminal defense lawyers, I love it.
Can you imagine? I would not want a piece of a gallows anywhere near
so,
me.
So I think there is still a gallows in the United States, and I believe it's at Fort Leavenworth.
Okay.
Because military death sentences are typically carried out by hanging.
Well, then the dude goes into this thing. He must have researched it, because I think this guy might have been his client or something. He goes, the hangman really has to know what he's doing, because it's all about the drop, and if you give it too long of a drop, you pull the guy's head off, and if you don't, you don't kill him. I'm sitting there listening to this going, my God, this is, God, how barbaric was that, Lou? I mean, I guess killing anybody by any means is barbaric, but really.
Yeah, I mean, do it or misplace the noose, you end up doing what, it's like those guys that Hitler had his Gestapo execute when they tried to murder him. They hung him up with piano wire.
I just, the history slowly. In your own city that you don't know about, isn't it really something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you. I think our discussion today was actually really good. And it's pretty interesting that both of us do believe that there is stuff that needs to happen. I don't like the idea that Congress somehow is now out of the loop. If I was in Congress, I'd be saying, wait a minute, this is our job, let's do it. I don't know why you guys aren't doing that. But
but you know, the only people you hear saying that are Republicans. I don't hear, and there's a reason for that, Tom. It's because, what, 90% of the federal executive votes Democrat or something like that?
Lourdes, there's been something wrong in Congress for like a real long time. Remember in 2007, if you can run over a couple minutes here, I know Wayne's probably listening, but in 2007 we had all the bank issues, right? And a lot of firms were, you know, every weekend, remember you heard about this bank being taken over by somebody, and you know, the government ate 40% of the bad loans, and then they shipped it to Bank of Lou for this amount of money, and I'm sitting there going, geez, it looks to me like Bank of Lou got quite a deal. Well, we had a deal with Mesro, invited me to come out and speak to all their correspondents regarding protective programs and what I do, right? And so I'm talking to these people. The keynote speaker, by the way, was not me. That doesn't shock you. Was her name Melissa Bean or something? Her last name was Bean. She was the representative from the North Shore District for like a real long time.
Yeah, I recognize her name.
Real nice. I mean, she was in her own business. We're not talking about I don't even remember if she was Democrat or Republican, but very established, very, and so I'm not usually the kid in the first row, but I put my hand up for questions, and I thought, you know, I'm going to guess, because I've read some of your, you know, your record, that you like competition in banking. And she goes, well, absolutely. And I said, well, every week now, this bank's going with this bank, with this bank, with this bank. And every week I read there's all these bad loans from, you know, Greg Bank, and the government ate 80% of them, and now it's with Lou Bank, and I'm sitting there going, they got three buildings, five drive-thrus, $90 bazillion under, and Lou's bank paid $30 million for the place. And I'm sitting there going, wow, how do we get on that list? So I said to her, okay, this, in Congress, you're seeing this happen. Does somebody say, okay, let's pick three people from each side of the aisle, and let's review the last five deals and see, you know, if somebody's sitting on somebody's lap, if somebody's paying somebody off. She looked at me, she goes, why would we ever do that? And I go, well, somebody has to. I mean, doesn't anybody regulate, when I say regulate, I hate that term, but doesn't anybody watch anybody and review something at all? I mean, what you're saying is kind of the same thing. Nobody's watching anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I refuse to believe it's only one side of the aisle. I mean,
I think it's more one side of the aisle. But yeah, sir. So I'm going to leave you with this, my favorite Latin quote: "Qui custodiat ipsos custodis." Who will guard the guardians themselves?
Well, that's right.
And on that, I believe you.
By the way, I took 4 years of Latin. I had no idea what you said there. How'd that work out?
Well, I'm sure I mispronounced it. Have a good day.
I wouldn't know.
Have a good weekend.
SP Futures up 36. The answer is up 130. We'll be right back with Wayne Manson.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you listening to me?
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 36. NASA Futures up 172. We're going to make a run at it again here today. We have the professor, Wayne Manson, with us.
Yes. Good morning.
How are you? How are you? I'm going to bet you were a Rolling Stones fan.
I was rather late. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so we had our own rock and roll guys we supported there. Many in Philadelphia think it was a raw deal that Cleveland got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum when they feel it should have gone to Philly instead.
Who were the big guys from Philly? I mean, I'm sure there were a bunch.
Oh, we had Dick Clark and American Bandstand. So
okay.
Every one of these guys in the 60s would rotate several times through Philadelphia. The Doors, all the top 40 people came through Philly.
You got to look at those old reruns just to check the hairstyle of the girls. But is it special or what?
Yeah, my sister was one of the teeny boppers at the studio for American Bandstand. I think I once saw her. She was, you know, I said, oh.
Well, every girl was 5'4", was 5'8", with the hair.
But, yeah, we had quite a one of the big rock and roll stations was WIBG Wibbage, which you know, we had they too really gave a lot to the rock and roll scene. But
what was Cleveland, while we're on the, what was Cleveland's claim to fame? How did they get it?
I think they also had a lot of rock and roll bands come out of Cleveland. You know, Philly, we had, you know, Frankie Avalon, Fabian.
Okay.
You know, I mean.
Well, while we're on the,
they had some. I don't know. I don't remember who all came through Cleveland, but you know, they claimed they had a fair claim on it, but Philly thought they did too.
Well, we're on the conspiracy thing. What's going on, Gene? Who killed Gene Hackman? What the hell's going on with that this morning?
Oh, I mean that he's one of my favorite actors. Not my favorite actors, but up in the top three. My favorite actor all time is Jack Nicholson, and nobody will ever compete with him. Although Gene Hackman made a good run at it, I don't know. They're saying it was carbon monoxide poisoning.
Him, his wife, now, and the dog.
Yeah. I mean. When I hear about a dog, I always think, no, that could not have been a willful, you know, a suicide thing.
No.
Nobody would do that. So, you know, somebody may have left the car running in the garage. It's, you know, it's very easy to do.
I thought these new cars, boy, I was watching some show where somebody was, if he had cancer or something. It was, I don't know if it was NCIS or what it was. And how the guy he went out and bought an old car, you know, like from the 60s, because the new ones, you almost can't, there's no carbon monoxide comes out of the new ones.
Right. Yeah, because all the stuff with the catalytic converters, yeah, and everything. So, I don't know. I think I saw a video of Gene Hackman, a very elderly Gene Hackman, in an old pickup truck that he had out there in New Mexico.
Maybe. Well, some of the movies that he was in that I thought were, I wouldn't recommend anybody watch them because they're so dark. I remember the movie the Conversation. Was that the eeriest, freakiest movie you ever watched? I mean, there's a bunch that I like that.
Yeah.
Greg,
yeah.
He was a guy that he's just a regular looking schlump. He wasn't, you know, just in a suit and a white shirt and a tie, and he was a guy that could. Bug just about anybody, right? And the big thing was as a mafia guy and somebody, they would take a little dinghy out in the middle of this big lake, and he found a way to bug them out there or something, and they were after him, and it was just about the darkest thing you've. I mean, there's a lot of dark movies, but that was pretty dark, and he was unbelievable in it.
One of my all time favorites was Mississippi Burning, where he really went after. You know, he played a Mississippi-born FBI agent. Kind of interesting with what's going on now, but
yeah.
he was given it to the good old boys down in Mississippi, and you know, the cops and whatnot that were members of the Klan.
Well, he was great in Hoosiers, I thought. I mean, you just name them, for God's sake. I mean, one after another. But Hoosiers, I thought that movie captured just him driving down there in the old car and the little towns with just the stop sign. It captured the area in such a way before the movie even started. You had a full idea of what life was like there and what to expect. I mean, just the way the directing was done. I just thought it was spectacular. But anyway,
I'm afraid with AI with AI now, a lot of that's going to be lost in movie making because. AI is not as intelligent as people like Elon Musk and others claim it is.
Well, I think you're probably right about that, but we have Carl is on every Tuesday and Friday, talks about how, and Kevin does as well. Kevin's been an IT guy forever, and how it's this constant, what do they call it, Greg? Where you can process the information, goes ahead of the amount you can store, and then you pick up on the amount you can store, then the processing gets better, back and forth, and it just continues to grow in what you can do and how much you can access. I still have, I don't know, I got, Greg, you send me stuff, a lot of people send me stuff, and I, I can't get in it. You know, they'll send me a link to, you know, the L.A. Times or something, and all of a sudden I can't get in if I don't pay. How does AI bust into everybody's law firm and everybody's educational stuff and the DePaul Library? How does AI get access to all that stuff? Do they hack it, or do they just? That's a question for me, because every time I find a site I like, the thing disappears or I got to pay for it. It seems.
Oh yeah, the ads. You know, they run all these ads for revenue. Now I have a website. I don't run any ads. I run it as a subscription website, which is very modest. Basically, just to pay the annual registration fee and the upkeep. But and the other thing, people are being inundated with now, and I don't know if you have. I know I have. It's all these emails from all these gold, buy gold, all this stuff, medical quackery stuff, and then you go down and you hit, it says unsubscribe. Now this is what happens when you unsubscribe. You're telling all these newsletter senders and these con artists that you're a live email user, and you get inundated with more. It's a trick.
No, I kind of figured that. Well, if you they used to call me, and they haven't done it in a while. I used to get calls all the time. My truck was 25 years old. Wanted me to have a warranty for my truck, right? And the weird part is, if you don't want to get any of these messages, press something something. Well, the next day, you get a call from a different state. You only stopped it for the one state, evidently. And the next day, the call would come from South Carolina. Hey, what about your car warranty? That kind of thing. Hey, there was a guy, to shift into the politics a little bit, there was a guy from, a senator from Utah, I think, was on a Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan and talking about what's going on in Washington. And she was, you know, digging as to whether or not it means we have a constitutional crisis. And the guy from Utah basically said, you know, we'll find out. He goes, I don't think so. He goes, I think when people get too out of line, if they do, the courts will stop it. And by the way, Congress is going to see everybody bitching that, you know, the federal is taking over our job. Maybe we'll actually get our head out of our behind and actually start doing our job. It might end up being very positive, you know, and people might actually get shaken up a little bit. And he was thinking that was going to happen. He was not for the way people were doing stuff. He says, well, there's some waste. He goes, I was a mayor in some town in Utah. Sounds like a pretty decent guy. He said, I was a mayor in some town in Utah. When I got in there, we realized we had, you know, 10% too many people, because it wasn't a big city or big town. He goes, we laid some people off. He goes, I personally spoke to every single person we laid off, and because everybody showed up for work, did what we asked them to do. They weren't bad people. They weren't scamming anybody. We just had too many. And I talked to every single one. I let them know that even though there wasn't a job for them anymore, by the way, they were a person. They were valuable. He goes, I don't agree with the way this is being done, with people standing there with chainsaws. He said, but the fact is, it sort of needs to happen. And if Congress were to get themselves moving better, it probably only has to happen once. And the judges, when things get too out of hand, should do what they're supposed to do. But we'll see if it works. And it shouldn't be a constitutional crisis. It should end up being an example of how the Constitution is supposed to work. Now,
yeah, you're talking about John Curtis, who replaced Mitt Romney in that seat from Utah. Now, Curtis is somewhat torn. He's an old friend of Romney from that old Republican Party. When I say old, the one that existed 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So Curtis is torn between, you know, moderation and trying to act like he's, you know, one of the firebrand Trump people. I saw that same interview. I could tell that he seemed rather tortured by some of his responses. Now, the other, and he also has to serve in the Senate with his fellow Utah Senator Mike Lee, who yesterday suggested the U.S. Bring back pirates to go after the drug cartels in Mexico, that we would have our own pirates.
We probably do have pirates all over the place. We just he wants to hire them, right?
Yeah. Well, I always said mercenary companies like Blackwater were nothing more than modern day pirates, brigands, soldiers of fortune, whatever you want to call them. But Curtis, well, you know, there's a few of these Republicans, like the majority leader John Thune from South Dakota, who really aren't their attempt to act as a Trumper. It doesn't come off very well. They're not going to get any Oscar nominations for their acts.
Well, there's a lot of moderate Republicans, right?
There are, but they're not in the party any longer. Last week there was a meeting in Washington, and I went to the one last year. I couldn't go this year of the ex-Republicans. It was jam-packed with attendees and speakers. Michael Steele, the former RNC chairman, was there. You had former Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger was there. And I was there last year when Liz Cheney spoke. But these people represent basically the party. I was very opposed to the Iraq War, George W. Bush's war. But these people now represent the party of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, George H.W. Bush, and Ronald Reagan, and they're on the outside of the party looking in.
Well, I'm a firm believer, you know, of course, now you never know where everybody is that the 40% of the population that are the disaffected Democrats, because I'm was a lifetime Democrat. Now I'm firmly, I don't know where that party went. I mean, everybody keeps talking about this great victory of Trump. I think they gave it to him. They lost. I mean, a different story. But there's not a whole lot of difference in thought between the disaffected moderate Democrats and the disaffected moderate Republicans.
And there's a lot of criticism that can be sent to the Democrats, too. For example, look at their leadership in the Congress right now. There's only a 2-seat deficit in the House of Representatives. Now, they lost a lot of Senate seats in the Senate, but their Senate leader is Chuck Schumer from Brooklyn, New York. Their a minority leader in the House is Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn, New York. The corrupted mayor of New York, who neither Schumer or Jeffries will say he needs to resign, he needs to be kicked out of our party, Eric Adams, they're not saying it. Eric Adams is also from Brooklyn. And this grifter on MSNBC, MSNBC fired some really good people. The guy they should have given walking papers to is Al Sharpton, who's another grifter who's also from Brooklyn, and has refused to condemn what Eric Adams has done. He says he's an old friend of mine, and I've never known him to lie. Well, apparently he did lie.
Yeah.
And he was indicted for it. So the Democrats, I mean, why is it that the leadership in the Congress is all from Brooklyn? There's Democrats in Congress from all around the country.
Well, if you're a Chicago person, this group we have here, I mean, they've done more damage to anybody wanting to be a Democrat in this town than anybody than ever. And the city is just going straight downhill. I watch it. I love the place. I wouldn't move when I worked for Pullman. And now I'm sitting there, this is crazy. I mean, any amount of debt to give money to people, you know, somebody got to tell this mayor that a community activist is not a job. You know, I mean, every single person he points to anything is a community activist. What is all that?
Yeah. From looking at these recent town hall meetings where members of Congress are really getting it, it doesn't matter whether Republican or Democrat, people are mad. Where I live, I have a lot of retirees living around me here in Florida. You know what their biggest angst is right now? They don't know whether they're going to get their next Social Security payment because of Musk and what he's doing. And you know, I live in a very red area of East Hillsborough County, east of Tampa Bay, and people are just they say, I don't know, I'm worried about my Social Security. Now they're worried about their Medicare, and people who have Medicaid services, they're worried as well. So now our local congressperson, he won't even have a town hall because he's a coward. He's a former car salesman. He's a Republican. Yeah, and you know, he doesn't want to face his own constituents. I saw the other day that Republicans have put out the House Republicans put out a notice to their members, try not to have any more town hall meetings because the visuals from these videos are hurting the party.
Well, it's
that's tough. I know members of Congress who lost their seats because they did not provide adequate constituent services. So let's see how that works out for these guys.
Well, it seems, Wayne, that a lot of stuff is unglued. But what is a solution? I don't see how the Democrats change things around in 18 months or 20 months. I mean, is it a third party? So, I mean, it seems like there are a lot of people disaffected in both spots.
Yeah.
And I don't, and you know, the weird part of it, and I mentioned this the other day, and I think people think I'm really going off the deep end. On some level, you listen to the Trump people, and everybody has to be on board, every judge. Only judge can be a Republican judge, or else we're going to impeach. Everybody has to buy the Kool-Aid, basically. And then you listen to Brennan Johnson in Chicago, it's the exact same thing on the other end. Everybody has to buy into this progressive movement. They actually have a group here now that he got funding. He's got a bunch of people they're going to research like all the Facebook and all the stuff of all the policemen and try and ferret out policemen that don't buy into the Kool-Aid, maybe they're right-wingers or something. How the hell do you do that? As long as somebody shows up and does their job for 8 hours or 12 hours, those guys are working their ass off. Why do you care what they think about at home?
I mean, you know what's different now, I think, is the fact that we've seen people in the federal government who have critical jobs, losing them to a South African Nazi immigrant. I say Nazi because his Canadian grandparents left Canada for apartheid South Africa because they thought Canada was going in the wrong direction. So his maternal grandparents went to South Africa. They said, "Oh, apartheid. They like Nazis here." And his mother is right along with that business. And now we have Musk yesterday or day before saying Canada's not a real country. I mean, this stuff has got to stop. I got a neighbor, a snowbird, who comes down here in the winter from Canada, and he's putting his house up for sale here. He says, I can't maintain a residence here where you got the people talking about maybe annexing Canada, invading them. These people are crazy. Trump, in a matter of 5 weeks, has killed NATO. He now falsely states that the EU was put together to screw the U.S. This guy knows nothing about history. The EU was put together to stop the rise of another Adolf Hitler or Mussolini, and right now it exists to prevent Europe from being taken over by Vladimir Putin. And Trump's wishy-washy.
Wayne, how did the EU get to? Actually, I've only had all the years I've had the show, I've only really had two really crummy guests, and one of them was the guy that Kathy Durbin got. Somehow, Kathy used to get the most amazing guests. I think that's how I ended up with you. Was Kathy Durbin, wasn't it?
yes. Well, I think she was a subscriber to my website, and then when Andy and I were visiting Chicago, yeah, investigating a story, and that's when we showed up. We had the wrong day.
But so what? We got you in. But she got me this guy from Finland, and he was a dude that is in the European Parliament, and where they actually have a competing government kind of thing. How did it get from common market, common defense through NATO, to where these guys are making, one of the guys who's come on the show, Chris Manns, said that the amount of rules over there, he said there's 75 pages of regulations regarding cabbage or something, that the EU, these people just sit there and pontificate rules for everybody, and that's why the Brits wanted no part of it. The week of the Brexit, didn't they come out with a bunch of rules on how you have to make your tea or something, and the Brits said this was the last straw?
I was over there when the British pub owners had to get rid of in the British pub, you go in and on the bar were these bar towels, but they were imprinted with the name of either some ale or beer or something, or maybe a brand of cigarettes, and they had to get rid of the towels because Brussels said, you know, that they're not healthy and you got to get rid of them. I used to go buy them at souvenir stores, and I was in this one place in Manchester, and the pub owner said, I said, oh, no, we got to use these plastic things now. And I said, oh, I used to collect the pub towels. And he says, hey, you want some? He brings out a whole big roll of them wrapped up in a couple of rubber bands. There must have been 40 bar towels there, all different kinds. That was a result of some health thing. But I think there's been a lot of pushback in Europe from farmers against these regulations. And I mean, they gave the world a new term. It's not bureaucrat, but eurocrat. And I think the present British Prime Minister, with NATO going down of the tubes, is probably going to try to get Britain back in through the back door, not a formal reapplication process. He certainly seems to be supporting.
Well, they're still members of what used to be the common market, right?
Oh no! What you have in Europe is the European Free Trade Association. They were always considered like the waiting room to join the European market, the European Union. And they're out there with Norway, which never went in, Iceland, and a few smaller places like Switzerland and Liechtenstein.
Well, if you don't have the common currency, is that like member B or as opposed to member? Because Switzerland has their own currency. So does, is it Norway? Britain does.
And even EU countries didn't go with the euro. Denmark and Sweden did not go with the euro. So okay, they still use their own currency.
So yeah, it's kind of a, but I, the whole idea of all these countries in kind of a small area considered in the U.S. Germany has their own government, France has their own government. They have this totally separate government. How many people are in that thing? It's like 500 people?
The European Parliament is quite large. I think there's around 600 members of the European Parliament.
Well, this guy's comment to me was, the Brexit, Britain had just voted to leave. And I said something about, well, yeah, we just had this Brexit vote. And he goes, there's another example of politicians just not telling their people how to vote properly. And I'm going, you know, it seems to me the power, the direction is not supposed to be coming from the politician to the voter. It's supposed to be the other way around. He and I had kind of a different point of view on that, just saying.
Yeah. Remember, in 2016, it was the Brexit vote passed first, and then we had the election here, and the Robert Mueller report on that election stated that there was Russian interference in both those, the referendum and our election that year.
Well, the two things that came out about that, I don't think you met him when you were in town, but he, my buddy Robert, he's a Federal Reserve guy, brilliant guy. He's not a policy guy, but he does a lot of work on currency settlements country to country. you know, which is a real big deal, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, you know, that love stocks and bonds and stuff don't realize that the currency market is, what, 3, 4, 5 times bigger than the stock market every day, or maybe 10 times. And
that's how George Soros made his billions.
Yeah, buying and selling money is
got it. You got it, right.
And so he was over there, and he goes, he's in London, and everybody's convinced that this Brexit vote's going down. But then he's a historian, sort of like you, and he takes the train down to where's the place where the boat, Nelson's boat is, and all the stuff. What town is that? The port south of London, where all the old
Portsmouth.
Yeah, he went down there. Isn't that? Aren't there some of the old Royal Navy boats from hundreds of years ago?
Yeah,
he went down there. So he says, on the train, everybody on the train, especially the people who are in the military and stuff, he goes, everybody's voting to get out. He goes, the difference in the polls. Plus, there was when you look at the polls here, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd like your opinions. Since people don't have a home phone, I don't see how you get a random survey. But in Britain, I went through the whole thing afterward, and why I do this, you know, I don't know, Wayne, because it's when something gets interesting, I dig. And they polled all these people. When you poll somebody, they always say a poll of likely voters, right? How they do that by saying, okay, Wayne's voted the last 8 elections, he's probably going to, you know, haul his ass down the block and vote again. So we're going to go, and Wayne's going to be in our random sample, and if his name comes up, we're going to go ask Wayne, hey, what are you going to vote for? Well, evidently, in Europe, or in Britain, I don't know if people don't stay in their houses longer than normal, but they had something like 2 million people that voted, and I don't think it was the Russian influence, that like hadn't voted in like 3 or 4 or 5 years, but were still registered. So they were on nobody's list of likely voters.
Yeah.
So the surveys were just flat out wrong, because they totally forgot. They would say, you know, Wayne hasn't you know, surfaced out of his house on election day for a decade. He's not voting, and sure enough, there's Wayne walking down the block. I mean,
I think polling is, you know, it's not like when there were these three major polling companies in this country, Gallup, Harris, and Roper. You know, people tended to stay around. They had a landline telephone. You could actually poll them in places like train stations and airports back then, and you get a fairly good response. But today, I think the polling is everyone's got a their own favorite pollster, and I don't think they're independent at all, or if they are, claim to be independent, they're tied in with some corporate media operation like the Washington Post or the New York Times, or some little college that's trying to get their name out there. Hey, we got this poll. Gee, you actually have students that go to your place? I never heard of your college.
We're going to make a quick break here. When we come back, let's talk about that a little bit, because I did, it's been a long time, but I did some statistics work in college, and a lot of it was, you know, how do you work it into a poll, and it's pretty tough to do. I don't know how you do it today. SP Futures up Thursday, 30, and SP Futures up 152. We're going to try and make it up a decent day here, maybe today and tomorrow, and not have such a bad week, but we'll see if that happens. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Those acts of God really stick it in and break it off, don't they?
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lone Wolf Pack Faction Jacks. I'm Tom. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 34. NASDAQ Futures up 176. One of the reasons for that is NVIDIA is up $3. Is they topped earnings expectation, and they claim their new chip for the AI moving forward has got a big backlog, and they're going to ramp up production of that. So they have a very positive report, like that guy always does. But stock's up 3. I mean, it was up a little more, but still it's up 3. We have the Dow's up 61. Not much going on in the Dow. We've got Goldman Sachs up 287. JP Morgan down 166. Microsoft up $1.87. NVIDIA, like I say, up 309. You know, we have Salesforce down 963. They came out with some bad stuff, but the stock's not down that much. You know, this is a bizarre one. You know, it's been like one of the biggest winners the last couple days, Greg. I don't know if you're looking. I don't know if people even know that it's in the Dow. It's Sherwin-Williams. I mean, why is a paint company been leading the place? But they have been the last few days. I don't know. To figure out what the hell's going on with those guys. It must be something pretty good. We're here up to DAX down 174.8%. FTSE up 20.2%. CAC around down 27.3%. So they're kind of going the other way here a little bit in Europe. Asia, Nikkei up 113.3%. Hang Seng, this is a quiet day for these guys. Only down 69. They've been having 2 and 3.5% moves in the last few weeks. They're crazy here. Up 23,718. Shanghai up 7. That's 0.2%. 33.88. Remember, they were under 2,900 not very long ago. Bonds up 5 basis points, 4.30. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.45. Japan up 4 basis points, 4.41. Oil, which cannot get out of its own way. Greg, how long are these guys going to be under $70? They're up 68 cents still, 69.30. Brent up 78 cents, 73.31. Natural gas down 2 cents, under $4, 3.93, as winter is kind of abating a little bit here. RBOB unchanged, 195. Gold, not so good on the gold today, down $32, 28.97. Silver down 14 cents, 32.13. Gold falls more than 1% as dollar firms ahead of inflation data. There you go. Copper up 5 cents, 4.64. Foreign exchange. The dollar is a little stronger, 104.6 against the euro. Euro's down just a hair. British pound, same way, but very small moves, 126.6. Dollar's been pretty steady. Crypto, these guys, a little bit of a bounce here, 2,600, 86,444. They've been getting clobbered every day, so we have a little bit of a bounce. They were down 7,500 yesterday at one point, or the day before, but they've been down from 100,000 now pretty steadily, and now a bounce today. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports? Not much sports.
Bulls. Morning, everyone. It is 7:43 here in Chicago. We've got 38 degrees, high of 46 today with a fog advisory, possible showers later. Phoenix 59 now, high of 89, which would be a record for today. Very warm there. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose getting worse. It's 29 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 41 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 44 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 30 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 45 minutes. Sports, we got Clippers beating the Bulls. That was 122-117. The Cubs beat the Diamondbacks, and then the White Sox lost by 11. And that's all I got.
White Sox are 0 for the spring.
Yeah, 0 for TBD.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, when you to talk to me, I'll take 30 seconds on this. It just shows you how hard it is to do it. So when you, but the conclusion, I think, is whenever you hear about a poll now, I think you're right. It's people ask the questions, and they want the answers in a certain way where it goes their way. I mean, it's, we can't really believe anybody. But if you were to actually, I'm not going to say you could even do this countrywide, but if you did, let's say you want to take a poll in Illinois of, you try and get the voting list as best you can, and you get, there's what, 10 million people in Illinois, something like that, and how many people do you think are likely voters? 3 maybe, Greg, at most? I mean, somebody, you've got to get that list, and you've got to say, all right, how much money do we have? How many people are we going to try and poll? And you can do a random polling with not a lot of people. However, it has to be random, and you've got to get that guy. So you probably could take 1,000 people. You know, if you got your random number table out or generated it with your computer, you got to get Greg Pappas, not the guy next door, not the guy across the street. So if you get all 1,000 of those people, and it's all random, you can do a pretty good job with a poll. Now the question is, how in God's name do you do that? So you can't go to Michigan Avenue and do polls, because the people that talk to you are different than the people who won't talk to you. The people that are on Michigan Avenue are different than the people that are on South Clark Street. you can't do that unless you really want a poll to come with the conclusions that you wanted to have. Am I right on this, Wayne?
Yeah, and you know what? If you look back at some of these newscasts from the 60s and into the 70s, where the news stations did man or woman on the street interviews before an election, they got a better sense of where the election was headed doing it that way, whether they were interviewing on Michigan Avenue or Fifth Avenue in New York or, you know, some sort of a local rural festival somewhere. County fair. I think they had a good sense for how elections were going to go back then. You take all those things, put them together, you have pretty much a good national cross section.
Well, you have to, if you're going to do it. I mean, you could probably go to the, you know, the downtown Brown Line stop and get people sort of all income levels in the morning, but they're also talking about only people who kind of have a job, so you got to be careful about that. But you can't like interview the people going into Neiman Marcus, for instance, and thinking you're getting a sample of society. You know, you got to be somewhat careful, right? I mean,
and back then we had a lot of these basically open air shopping malls where people were strolling in and out, all income brackets. You know, they weren't all going into the expensive jewelry stores. They were probably going there maybe to buy a hot dog.
Well, yeah, and if the group that is in Washington right now, what if they blow up and lose 10 seats in the midterm or something in the Congress and the Senate? What does that all mean? I mean, are these guys going to be successful? I actually don't mind to a large extent. I mean, you know my feelings on the man personally because I've known people that have known him. But a change in tone sometimes does wake some people up, and I'm not so upset with the change in tone. But that maybe you can shake some people up and get some places, because I think a lot of Washington could use a little bit of a shake up. It's not like, but the thing that I was
you're right. A lot of people who voted for Trump still say, well, you know, we still support him, but what they almost to a person are saying, we don't like Elon Musk.
Right. Well, absolutely. And you know, everybody I think has some sense that the reason why they paid more for a gas car in the last 5 years because Trump got a check or Musk got a check. The guy's got $9 billion from these programs.
Yeah.
So I mean, people think that he's kind of not the right guy. I mean, for this sort of thing.
And personally, I think he's turning off a lot of conservative voters. You know, having all these kids and giving them the names of mathematical formulas.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of he's wearing that get up in the cabinet meeting yesterday, that black hat and a black shirt. I mean, everyone else had the women were well dressed. And the men had a suit on, and here he comes in looking like he just wandered in from where the bums hang out over in Lafayette Park.
Wayne, what? If you go back through history, and you mentioned earlier that you weren't all that touched by the sense of history of the current administration, but there was a time. I mean, you know, we've been around a while. If you went back into the, you know, when I can remember looking at some foreign stuff, you know, maybe in the mid '60s where we, you know. We would do some stuff in the late 60s in high school. We would obviously talk about politics and so forth. I mean, you would never in 1954 have demanded that the Germans get their own army back together, right? Or telling Japan, hey, guys, you got to ramp it up because we're worried about this China group after what Japan had just done to China 10 years before. And now it seems fairly clear to a lot of people that, you know, Russia's the enemy right next to Germany, damn near, that, hey, maybe you guys need to help out here a little bit, which they have. I mean, they are doing a lot. I mean, some. Maybe not enough, maybe whatever. When, if you could put a date on it, when did we not fear the Germans having, you know, 15 tank divisions where we sure as hell didn't want them having them in 1962? I mean, now all of a sudden, why doesn't Japan have a big air force and a big navy and stuff? Well, the last time they did, it kind of cost people a few lives. I mean, when did that tone change, or has it? Or
yeah, I think it changed about 10 years after the East and West Germany united. By the way, when that happened, the Italian foreign minister basically lost his job because he said, I like Germany so much, I prefer that there's still be two of them. you know, that mindset. Thatcher was another one. Margaret Thatcher was another one who was very tepid about reunification of Germany. But after they united, I'd say around 1996 or so, I don't think there was any big problem with Germany, you know, building up its defenses. Japan, on the other hand, you know, the Chinese and the Korean, South Korea, you know, the one thing North and South Korea agree on is that Japan should not be a rearmed military power in Asia. I think there'll be a little bit more angst in Asia, I should say, if Japan starts building up. But I think they're going to have to, and I think Japan is on the verge of announcing that they're going into the nuclear weapons club.
What I think Iran was a couple of years. Well, there was a big, I use the term bitch fight. Who? What was the big fight on the submarines? I mean, Japan wants a few, and Australia wanted a few, and the French had a deal, and then we kind of bleep-canned the deal, and then now it was... Who ended up making the submarines that the Australians and the Japanese wanted, and the French were going to provide them, and are we building those? There is some build-up in at least the submarine navies of both Australia and Japan, right?
Yeah, I think the U.S. agreed to sell Australian nuclear-powered submarines, and the other issue, France was building some diesel submarines for Taiwan, and the Chinese apparently got all upset about that. I don't know where that contract stands now. I haven't checked it out, but I think Taiwan. Is going to be another country we're going to see really start to build. They already have an active military because of the threat from China, but I think they're on the verge of making the announcement that they are nuclear armed as well.
But do they have they got bombers and missiles and submarines? You got to get them there somehow.
They have missiles. If they use their nukes, it would be basically air missiles and also torpedoes. Launched from their submarines,
so they have missile-powered subs.
Their big thing would be to wipe out as many Chinese military airfields and port facilities as possible before the Chinese would launch an invasion of Taiwan.
I have a real stupid question. Where's Lou when I need him? Can you, if you have a diesel sub, are those things powerful enough to have missiles or no? I'm thinking.
Yeah, no. When I was in the Navy, we used to track. The Soviet diesel electric subs all the time that were armed with cruise missiles and that was basically what they had then. There was a few that had intermediate range ballistic missiles, but their nukes were the ones that had the what we call the continent busters.
That was the Hunt for Red October was a nuke, right?
Oh yeah, that was a nuke. Yeah, was a Typhoon class, which was, I think, it's still the largest submarine ever built by anyone in the world.
Lou said something about the diesel subs. Now they scrub oxygen out of the water, so they don't have to vent up.
They're extremely quiet. They're quieter than the nukes because of that snorkeling that they do to recharge their batteries. On a nuclear submarine, you've got a lot of turbo generators and stuff like that. And they make noise, and the acoustic detection equipment pick them up.
Well, so right now, if you had to put China against, I'm going to say, Korea, Japan, Australia, they obviously still outgun the three of them, right? I would imagine by a lot.
Well, the Chinese just conducted a surprise live-fire naval exercise between Australia and New Zealand, which surprised all. Now, the navies of both countries said they were tracking them all along, but all of a sudden, the commercial airliners traveling back and forth from Australia and New Zealand receive a radio message from the Chinese warship saying, steer clear, we're firing missiles here, steer clear this area 19 miles. And that's caused a lot of problems in Australia and New Zealand because they feel they're somewhat vulnerable now.
Well, it's what do you the tariff stuff, what's going to happen when everybody in this country realizes that a tariff is a tax on you, not them?
Yeah. I worry about some of the small businesses I go to around here, the Polish deli that most of their inventory is sent in from Poland. Poland's in the EU. They'd be hit hard. My Italian deli, which gets a lot of their stuff directly from Italy. And watch the price of maple syrup with the tariffs on Canada and your $5 a piece avocado.
Yeah, I just, the interesting part of this is when he did the tariffs the first time. Wait, I got online and I looked up the tariff schedule, and I don't know what I paged into. Like the thing is like, I don't know, 1,000 pages long, and I paged into like page 412 or something. There had to be how many different tariffs on about 100 different kinds of cottage cheese. I don't even know we had so many kinds of cottage cheese. Is everybody going through every line figuring out how the hell they're going to be affected? I mean, this used to be, you know, when I was in college, this was so simple. Well, it was never really simple, but it was complex, but not so bad. You know, the classic example, I had it both in grad school and undergrad, was, okay, we're going to put a tariff on automobiles. Well, at the time, Volkswagens and Mercedes were made in Germany, shipped here whole. So you could say, okay, the Mercedes is, you know, 15 grand and the Cadillac's 12. So if you put a $3,000 tariff on the Mercedes, that would mean 18, but not really, because Mercedes might say, okay, we're going to eat half of that, so we're going to lower the price down $1,500. So now that drops the tariff a little bit. So now we're really only $1,500, maybe $1,400 and something higher than we were before, not the whole full $3,000. And Cadillac might say, well, guess what? Since those guys are now more expensive and we're their, quote, competitor, we're going to bump the Cadillac $500 or $800 or maybe even $1,000. So now you end up paying more on both sides and not just screwing with Mercedes. I mean, but now, I mean, a lot of these people have plants in both countries. They're assembled here. And some of the stuff with Canada, the thing with Canada is so weird, or Mexico, there is no Waynemobile in Canada. I mean, the things they're making up there are Fords and Chevys. So it gets so overly complicated that are we shipping, is the engine made up there that comes here, or something, some parts of the engine are coming here, the engine is assembled here, the engine goes back to Canada. There's examples that people have sent me of parts going back and forth 3, 4, and 5 times. Are we going to have a tariff if they do the same thing? Are we going to have a tariff every single time a part flies back and forth, or are there going to be exceptions? I can't imagine writing this up. Just when we're only Mercedes and Cadillacs, it was complicated enough to figure out where you were going to end up. But how do you even...
Well, first of all, you don't have anybody in charge of the White House who understands anything. Trump the other day said, whoever signed this bill that replaced NAFTA, it's the worst thing that's ever been signed, and they had to inform him, well, Mr. Trump, you signed it in your last term. I mean, the inmates are running the asylum.
Well, I mean, but this is, if everybody was straight and it wasn't just politics, that's why I'm really hoping that it's just kind of a very New York-style wake-up call, kind of on steroids. There's somebody. I mean, if you have a certain personality, if you're selling your house and you want $500,000 for it, I mean, I can come in and say, I look at it and I say, I'm 475 bid or something. Or you could have a personality that says, this house is no good. Look at this. Look at that. By the way, I don't like you. I'm going to have the city come by and inspect it and threaten you up and down all over the damn place. And then walk out and have his, rummy say he really means he's 480 bid. I mean, I can't figure out how much of it is just style points, whether he's actually trying to get to the right place or not. I don't know.
I the fact that he brought Peter Navarro, the ex-convict, back in a role in trade. I mean, this guy knows nothing about trade. He's all it is revenge with him. And he said we ought to throw Canada out of our intelligence sharing relationship. Well, Canada starts with us at the North American Aeros Space Defense Command out in Colorado.
Yeah.
How do you do that,
I don't know. Wayne, we'll talk next week, buddy. Have a good weekend. Hope the weather stays nice down there. SP Futures up 16. We're down a little bit from the high, but we're still up. And NASDAQ Futures on 130. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.